Okay, the next case is Raymond Christopher Sharp versus State, number 62872. Mr. Green, you ready to roll?
I am, sir. May I proceed to the podium?
Sure.
Thank you very much.
With your permission, Mr. Justice Hardesty, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of rebuttal if necessary.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. There's no reply filed in this case, so you don't have any time to reserve. So your argument should be the entire 15 minutes.
We may use only 10 of it then, Your Honor. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Justice Hardesty, Mr. Justice Douglas, and Mr. Justice Cherry. Are there any specific questions or concerns which the court has as to one or more of the issues which have been raised?
Counsel, I guess part of the concern I have is that a lot of what went on and what this is being appealed, there were no objections. It was not objected to. And I'm looking to begin with as to the introduction of types of felonies or things of that nature, just to begin with, as a starting point.
The strategy, of course, Your Honor, is to limit this case at trial to what was at issue. The felonies themselves, Your Honor, became important at sentencing when I had objected to certain portions of one or more of the California convictions, what's known as a long form, and that is that on page 2 of the long form, where the defendant was to acknowledge the fact that his sentences could be used in the future to enhance his sentences, there was nothing left at that point. We made it quite clear to the jury, Your Honor, which is the trial court, and we made it quite clear to this court, that the issue of the felony status was not at issue.
Where that became a stipulation from your side to the state that we don't contest the convictions?
That's why we didn't do a stipulation. No, there was no stipulation, Mr. Justice Douglas, for the following reason. In this instance, we're trying to narrow these points in this complicated case to 5 firearms, which were found at the Gagnier residence in Clark County on the late afternoon and early evening of July 2nd, 2011. There was a previous trial in this matter, which occurred over the course of about 9 or 10 days, in September of 2011, right about that 60-day rule. In that case, Your Honor, there were allegations of kidnapping with use of a deadly weapon resulting in substantial bodily harm, battery constituting domestic violence with use of a deadly weapon resulting in substantial bodily harm, and assault with a deadly weapon, substantial bodily harm. These points had literally been already litigated in the first trial. And as to the lack of objection, it was deliberate so that we don't reinforce the point that the green horse just walked through the courtroom. And keep this narrow and keep it tight to the firearms. But as we pointed out in September of 2012, some 2 months before the trial of this matter, in a motion in limine, we did two things. We filed two motions in limine. First was the double jeopardy on the that issue, and then we filed a motion in limine to keep this case clean, keep all these other points out about the assault and the domestic violence, the woman running around scantily clad in only a thong, claiming she had been beaten by appellant Raymond Sharp. So there was a deliberate strategy to keep the issues focused and not present a situation, Mr. Justice Douglas, where we're reinforcing that point. Oh, by the way, objection, objection, objection. Just let it come out, and even if he's a felon, so what? The issue is possession in this case.
I think Justice Douglas's question goes to the admission in part to the admission of Exhibit 85, which was the various prior convictions that proved that he was an ex-felon. You didn't stipulate on the record he is an ex-felon, so the state had to at least introduce some evidence of the fact that he was an ex-felon. The problem is that there doesn't appear to be any objection to the state's referring to the nature of the crimes covered by those convictions in their argument, is there?
No. That's essentially the point. The answer is no, sir.
So even if this court were inclined to agree with you that in a felon in possession of a firearm, the only fact that the state has to prove is the existence of the defendant's felony status, when an exhibit comes into evidence without objection that includes a description of the crimes for which the defendant has been found guilty, it seems to me that our jurisprudence allows a party to argue the evidence, which would include the nature of the offenses that are covered by the prior convictions. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I would agree. But the point here, sir, once again, really revolves around the issue of can they prove the possession. Now, once again, they've got the house, the Gagnier house. There were representations that by Mr. Sharp using different names that he had owned the house. There was material found inside of the house. But even with all of that, doesn't mean that he lived there. The fact that he was found a short distance away, these are all circumstantial points. The fact that on the assault rifle of the 1847, where there was a palm print, the palm print was on, and this is quite clear in the record, the palm print was on the right side of the weapon with the left palm print, which would be inconsistent with the intended use of that weapon. That is, unless you're going to use that weapon and push it into somebody's face, it's not for its intended use. So could it have been a struggle? Could it have been the fact that it had been touched at some other time for some other purpose? But the main point here, sir, I think, is that while in almost every felon in possession case, unless you've got just someone, a probation officer, a police officer, seeing the firearm walking through by a budget suite and see it laying on the bed, or seeing it sitting on the car seat of the passenger seat, almost all felon in possession cases which go to trial generally, or almost all of them, have an underlying component. And that is, what was it? It was drugs and it was guns. So we don't let the jury know about the felony cases, of the felony convictions in the drug case. That's why we bifurcate the trial. Mm-hmm. But in this case, because of what happened in the September 2011 trial, it's our contention, I'll be just very brief on this point, sir, it's our contention that that case had already been tried. The kidnapping utilized the weapon, a pistol, or some type of firearm. The battery constituting domestic violence was the weapon, similarly the firearm. And the assault with the deadly weapon was the firearm. So in our position, this is why we filed this hybrid form of double jeopardy, where perhaps it could have been a cleaner first trial. But we come into this case with the specific points looking at that. That is the firearms. Brings me to another issue, if I may, sir.
Well, let me ask a question.
Yes,
first.
Of course, Justice Chair.
There's no stipulation as to ex-felon. There's no objection to Exhibit 85. What were the DA supposed to do? I mean, they had to prove. That's part of the proof, that he's an ex-felon. They have to prove it. I mean, well, they had no choice. You gave them no choice.
Well, our Supreme Court rules state that a criminal defense attorney in defending a criminal case must do everything he can legitimately to have the state prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. We were stuck with a very ugly set of facts from the prior history, Your Honor, which we could not change. So the point is that even if this court finds that that point was plausible, we do believe that the firearms themselves should have been consolidated into a single count instead of the five counts.
But if it was five counts or one count, does it really make that much difference as far as the sentencing in this matter?
It makes a great deal of difference in sentencing, Your Honor, because with five counts, you could have five consecutive sentences. And in this case, we have the filing of the habitual criminal, there's a habitual criminal allegation.
And that was because of other felonies.
That is correct. But you could still, the district court could still have allowed the, still could have had these firearms in consecutive counts, Your Honor. And that's why we pointed out in the Barrett case, and that's reported at 118 Nevada 410, and that's on page 14 of our brief. I'm not going to quote the entire passage, but it does say that, you know, multiplicitous indictment, and we're talking about the second indictment here.
But even if we reverse, Mr. Green, let's say we reverse and we send it back and say that there's only one count in possession of firearm by an ex-felon, even though there's only one count, he's still got prior felonies where he can still get the habitual criminal. I mean, what do we accomplish here? I don't understand where we're trying to go with this. I'd like to try to help you out, of course, but I don't see where you're going there.
Okay. There's the substantial majority, okay, almost all the federal circuits say that when you've got multiple weapons in the same location at the same time, it's one count. There are many cases which they say if the weapons are in different counts, in different locations, one's in a storage unit, one's in the mother's house, one's in your house, those are three different counts. The idea, I guess, is actually at sentencing and to make the cases go a little bit easier to, actually the word is consolidation. And that's what this court found. That's what this court found is into multiplicity in charging documents in the better case. The state points out, and I'll be just in another moment, the state points out to the court the Mueller decision, and that is the case involving drugs. We've got drugs that are found in a similar location, but they're two sets of drugs. We've got heroin and cocaine. Admittedly, they are drugs, but they're not the same. The state also points out the Wilson case, where the children were there was the use of the minor in a production of pornography. In that case, it is the use of each individual minor which makes the case legitimate under our statute and makes it consistent with the Bernard decision, which we just pointed out just a moment ago, which says that you're going to have multiplicity, which is improper when they're not at different times and they're not at different places. And this court stated the general test for multiplicity is that offenses are separate if each requires proof of an additional fact and the other does not. It follows that offenses are not multiplicitous when they occur at different times in different places because they cannot be said to arise out of a single wrongful act. Here we have five weapons in the particular location. It's at the same time, and I'll conclude my argument unless the court has any other points that I'd like me to raise.
In the prior trial, that September trial, he was convicted of all those other offenses, the kidnapping and the coercion and the living
with the earnings
per prostitute.
Plus the vehicle counts, possession of vehicles with improper or altered VIN numbers. Yes, sir.
So he was convicted of all those felonies?
Yes, sir. This court affirmed it. We had oral argument in this case in September, in December of 2012.
So it was all affirmed. That's all been affirmed by us?
Yes, sir. That was around March or April of 2013.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Moy?
Good Good afternoon, members of the Supreme Court, Justices, Mr. Green. May it please the Court. The state of Nevada in the instant case charged defendant Raymond Sharp with a total of 18 counts. To give some prior backstory to this, he was originally only charged with, I believe, 12 or 13 that included the ex-felon of possession of firearm, but then a superseding indictment came down adding evidence of a chop shop that had been from the vehicles that were also seized on the scene. At the time, Mr. Green was not trial counsel. At the time, we actually went to trial 5 days after that superseding indictment. And it was a very strategic decision made by Mr. Stein, previous trial counsel. As this court is somewhat aware from reading the facts of this case, this is a pandering case. Mr. Stein quite brilliantly assessed that we actually didn't have our victim when he announced ready for trial, but faced with the proposition of asking for a continuance on behalf of the state went ahead and announced ready, informed Judge Kadish, listen, the state's looking to still receive forensic information from fingerprints and DNA with reference to the firearms. Pursuant to Brown versus State, those have to be severed or bifurcated anyway. Actually, Brown says severance, Morales says bifurcation. So all parties agreed we would sever the ex-felon and proceed to trial on the other 13 counts, which would be the pandering, the domestic violence, and assault cases, and the chop shop counts. Defendant, through his attorney, Mr. Stein, did not object to the severance at that time, which I believe is when the time would have been to object to that without raising this double jeopardy argument, which is completely flies in the face of Brown versus State, where this court, even after affirming Brown, this court then stated that in the future, these cases need to be severed. The ex-felon needs to be severed from the rest. Then later on, the court came down with Morales that said that bifurcation is an acceptable alternative to that. But this court has never retreated from Brown, and Brown is the controlling case law in this case. We had no choice but to sever or bifurcate those counts, period. End of story. If Mr. Stein or Mr. Sharp or Mr. Green or anybody at that time wanted to say, no, let's just have a trial on all of it because we think there's double jeopardy implications, that would have been the time to do that. That was not done in this case. But with reference to the double jeopardy, we talk about Blockberger. And Blockberger is basically separate elements mean double jeopardy doesn't apply. So what Mr. Green complains about is the first degree kidnapping with use, which is 200-310, 200-320, and 193-165, do not bear the same elements as ex-felon in possession of firearm. Battery constitutes domestic violence with use of a deadly weapon resulting in substantial bodily harm, which is 200-471. Again, not the same elements as ex-felon in possession of firearm.
Did you really need five counts of possession of ex-felon in possession of firearm? Did you really need five counts?
Did we need them?
Yeah.
No, but I mean,
this guy was never going to get out from the first trial.
No, but I do not subscribe to the proposition that we let people get away with crime simply because they've done so many that we've lost count. We offered him, hey, just take one count and we'll run it concurrent because Judge Kadish already gave you 13 life sentences and he declined that.
You just saved yourself with me by saying that.
Huh?
You just saved yourself by saying that. That's I just wanted to know.
No, we extended that offer to Mr. Sharp.
Then you could sit down.
And he declined. Now, with regard to Mr. Green asking this court to impose Ninth Circuit case law and call it all one count, I don't believe that should occur. First of all, Ninth Circuit does not apply to us. The Ninth Circuit's evaluation of a federal statute where one of the elements is the introduction of firearms into interstate commerce should have and shouldn't have no bearing.
How do we deal with the language, any firearm? Singular, plural, how do we deal with that?
If the legislature intended for it to be firearms, plural, and you get a 1-6, no matter whether you have one or two or 20.
Do we know from the legislative history what they intended?
We don't know for a fact from the legislative history what they intended, but it's certainly not for this court to read that into the tea leaves here. Certainly in light of this court's prior holdings.
If the statute is not clear, if we should say decide it's ambiguous, then wouldn't it be incumbent upon us to clarify that language?
If you don't know for sure, then
the question is, do you know from the legislative history?
I believe that statute predates my ability to practice law. I was not present. But we can look at, when we examine these multiplicity counts, which as this court has done, and most recently in Jackson in 2012, which we cite in our brief, what they look to, and even in the Jackson case, I don't believe they actually knew for certain what the legislative intent was, but what they say is that you look at the language of the statute, and in the language of the ex-felon possession of firearm statute, it says no person shall possess or have control of or own any firearm. It's not plural, it's not anything like that. Also, it's possession. Each possession is different in this case. Officers didn't come up to Raymond Sharp with the CZ firearm on one hip, the Smith & Wesson on the other hip, the Ruger attached to his ankle with the AK-47 over his shoulder holding the AR-15. That's not what happened in this case. In this case, each of those possessions are different, which under the federal laws, they still can be prosecuted differently. And in this case, what do we know from the facts of this case? Alicia Brennan was pistol whipped with one of those firearms. We believe that to be the Smith & Wesson that's found in a drawer next to the CZ handgun, which is next to the paperwork belonging to Mr. Sharp in the master bedroom where all the male clothing is found and all the other items are. Then when he drags her back into the house using one of those firearms, he's then looking at the closed circuit camera, sees the police showing up, and as the police are arriving, he is loading rounds into a rifle, saying, bitch, if the cop's done, I'm going to shoot you and shoot them. What else do we know? We know he put the wrong type of ammunition in that. He loaded an AK-47 with 223 rounds. The 223 rounds are actually the proper ammunition for the AR-15. Where is that AR-15 found? On the stairwell landing by Officer Powell when they're clearing the residence. So what this jury inferred is that, yes, those are four distinct separate possessions, one that stayed in the drawer the entire time next to Mr. Sharp's stuff, one that Mr. Sharp used to pistol whip her, one that he was attempting to load with the wrong ammunition, and one that he went upstairs to retrieve because he's got the right gun for the right ammunition now when he ran out of time and went fleeing out the back. There's then that fifth firearm that's found in a suitcase inside a sock with the remainder of his property, not the remainder of his property, but numerous other pieces of paperwork belonging to him in his name, in his business's name, in his alias's name of Rashad Shelton, right next to bulletproof vests that fit his size. So these are five distinctively separate possessions. This isn't one storage locker where they found all these guns. So no, this isn't the case to do that in. And particularly, it gives Mr. Sharp no benefit anyway because we ran them concurrently. Yet another reason not to follow Ninth Circuit case law is even though the federal court system does have this option available, and I call it an option available because the feds would probably still charge this separately, I believe, because it still does say, unless you can show distinct possessions. These are distinct possessions in this case. This isn't one storage locker. But a reason we shouldn't follow the federal courts is even in the cases where they do consolidate them all into one count, they're penalized separately under the federal sentencing guidelines.
Well, maybe and that the is analysis actually is a little easier than that. The plain meaning of the word any in the dictionary is one or more.
That is true. That is true.
Anything else you wanted to cover, counsel?
With respect to the idea that the court was to sua sponte redact all of our judgments and convictions, Ms. Mercer and I, who tried this case, we enjoy a very great working relationship with Mr. Green. If Mr. Green had asked us to redact them, we would have. But there was no objection at the time the clerk read it. There was no offer of stipulation. There was no objection to the admission of the document. In fact, we approached the bench, and Mr. Green stated that his objection is more toward preserving his rights under federal cases and if he were to collaterally attack these in the California jurisdiction. So having said that, I don't believe this case should be reversed. I believe it should be affirmed, and I don't believe there should be any proactive ruling from this court that we're going to call all firearms one count. And with that, I will submit it. Thank you.
Okay, the case will stand submitted. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this afternoon and your briefs.